This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It's time, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. You like that stuff, right, Dave?
Love it.
It's a new you.
Tastes really good.
It's a new you. You're moving around. You're
Somebody asked
around.
Me, you know, oh, does that stuff really work? I said, it seems to, man, because when I was in Green Bay, I didn't have it. I don't know if cold weather makes you sore, but, oh, man, I was sore.
I don't think cold weather helps with
arthritis and whatnot.
Yeah, if you've got stiff joints or, you know, you got any kind of that stuff. I don't think it's a I think it becomes a hindrance.
Yeah, I think you feel, Arizona, you feel a heck of a lot better.
Yeah, you do.
So there you go. It's brought to you by Cherish. Meanwhile, we got a big show coming up. The Professor John Clayton will be back with us at 4 o'clock. And I tweeted out we had a big announcement coming up concerning Il Hombre, Michael Bradley. He will now be with us at 5 o'clock for a long segment every Tuesday.
That's great.
Now that the
great news,
there's
Bob.
Your silver lining to the Seahawks being out of the postseason.
So instead of a player spotlight, which we usually do.
Yeah, we normally had our player spotlight every day at 5, but their season has come to an end. So that will come to an end for this season, in which case the 5 o'clock segment every Tuesday will feature Il Hombre for 20 minutes. 20 minutes of radio gold, of radio glory right there. And it starts today. So he'll be with us today at 5 o'clock. You excited about that, Jim?
I'm fired up, especially every time he hangs up. That's my favorite part.
Well, now you have to wait longer for the hang up.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It'll be worth the wait.
Yeah, it'll build that anticipation will build longer, so it'll be even more satisfying.
Should I tell the story really quick about how I couldn't remember his name?
Sure.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that again.
Bob was gone. We
I
were
was
doing
there
it in
for
the backup,
it.
And I call him El Diablo so many times. I knew his name was Michael Bradley, but I wanted to introduce him properly because I was leading the show. And so I had to go over while he was on the line and whisper to Mara, what's his name again? She goes, Michael Bradley. I'm like, I know that. Oh, El Hombre. Like, yeah. So
what's
anyway,
his name again?
I felt
How'd you come up
that?
With El Diablo anyway? You just were kind Diablo? Of fun with it, right?
Diablo means devil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You
the,
didn't know
the
that?
Devil.
I did not know
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so that's why I started calling
El Hombre is
El Diablo.
The man.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The man, the devil, whatever.
You didn't know that, Jim?
No, I didn't know that, Mara.
Oh, wow.
I just thought it would be funnier to you because you
Does everyone
know, that Dave
know what Diablo means?
Him.
Diablo.
Diablo, not Diablo.
Diablo.
Diablo, yeah. Okay. I'd say probably
Spanish for devil.
I would say 90% of our audience knew
right.
what Diablo
well,
meant.
I apologize to Mr. Morelli.
Okay.
And who's Mr. Morelli? I took two
oh,
years.
Oh, your Spanish teacher.
2 years of Spanish at Redmond High School.
You guys didn't cover the. Cover El Diablo,
though. Probably did.
Yeah. All right. So, either way, all right. Dave remembered his name after Mora told him, and then Jim now knows what it means.
Okay.
Even though that's not his name, it's El Hombre.
Let's move on before we lose the listeners we have out there on the 405.
Yes.
You guys get into work okay today? Boy, there's a lot of snow up on Cougar Mountain.
I'm in West Seattle, and there's very little. Very little. It wasn't sticking to the streets. It's on the sidewalks and everything, and all that, but the streets were fine.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's good.
It's weird how it's just different no matter wherever you live. I mean, there's 4 to 6 inches in my place. Dave, what do you have, like 6 or 8 up there on the plateau?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some steep hills up there, too. I couldn't get up the other day with my Ford Fusion. It was 3:30 at night, and they hadn't plowed the roads when I got back from Green Bay. So I had to back it up and go the long way, more of a gradual slope.
Mm.
Yeah, so, yeah, there's lots of cars. Lots of four-wheel drives. Parked on the side of the road.
Really?
Yeah.
They couldn't get through?
Well,
it's that very
they didn't know.
You're very satisfied by that. Look
no,
at you.
Well, it's because there's lots of people that buy those cars because they think they look cool or whatever, and they don't realize that they're four-wheel drive, and if you push a button. I used to have to – I had one where you had to go and lock the hubs in the front, you know, on the front wheels, and then, you know, you put it into four high or whatever. But, yeah, there was lots of them last year or 2 years ago when we had a lot of snow. No, last year that there were like Range Rovers. I had a Land Rover in, when I was in Denver.
Uh-huh.
I could not get that car to slide in the snow.
Really?
It was unbelievable. It was like a tank.
Even downhill.
Yeah, there were Range Rovers parked on the side of the road.
You think
people
they
that
weren't
didn't
aware
realize,
of the buttons?
Yeah. That's exactly what
did
I'm
you
saying.
You just want to go by every one of them and just go, here, you do this.
There you
hit
go.
Hit that button for them.
Yeah, you'd be. No, they were gone. They had already hiked up the hill.
You'd be a savior to all of them. All right. Well, hey, we had the Pete Carroll press conference happening yesterday, and he hit a few things we didn't get a chance to address. We had a short show because of the national title game, which we will discuss. In fact, two highlights have been posted on our Bob, Dave, and Moore Twitter page, courtesy of Dave Wyman. Two highlights that look pretty similar, except one of them drew a penalty flag and got a kid ejected, and the other got nothing.
Got nothing. Well, here's what's similar about them. They're both tackles.
Yeah.
Guys making tackles. Young college guys making a tackle. It's football. What do you do in football? You make a tackle. And that's what they were doing. And one of them was ejected.
Yeah, so check that out. We posted both videos up there at Bob, Dave, and Moore on Twitter. Meanwhile, we talked a bit about what went wrong in this game, what went wrong during the season. In fact, we were looking at some of the defensive stats, comparing this year and last year, and they weren't great last year, but they were kind of middling. They were like 11th in, I think, points allowed and yards allowed per game in terms of rushing. And you fast forward to this year, they're 22nd in the league in points allowed, which to me is the only stat that truly matters for a defense, right? You can give up yardage, and yeah, I know that eats up clock, but ultimately, how often are you letting the opposition score? That's the most defining stat for me for a defense. And they led the league 4 years in a row in that stat. They were 22nd in the league this year in points allowed. And Pete Carroll was asked yesterday during the press conference about defense. Are there going to be adjustments to this defense?
There'll be some of everything. Yeah, some, a little bit of everything. We're going to work hard at it. Some of it will be going back to things we've done, and some of the things will be moving forward. So I'm really excited to go about it. It's difficult to adjust some things in the middle of the year, but it was interesting. We played a lot of base defense versus three wide receivers, and we didn't see very much of it. You know, and kind of went away, and that was an interesting turn. You know, for we weren't sure how that was going to turn out, but where people would say, "Oh, hey, you can't do that." Well, when we did it, we didn't see much anymore. You know, it changed the game a little bit. That surprised us a little. Some that I didn't think that would happen, but we have to adjust to that.
What do you think of that, Dave? First of all, him saying, "Well, it's tough to adjust in the middle of the year." I have a hard time buying that. We had KJ Wright on the show. We asked him about Cody Barton and, you know, hey, how do you think he's doing? And he said, you know what? What I loved about his ability, or what we saw from him, is his ability to adapt. We said, hey, I know we've been working on this thing, we didn't specify, all week. Forget that. We're doing this now. That's within a game. How is it not easy, or how can you not say, you know what? Okay, we're gonna tweak the defense a little bit here, however they want to do it. Why is that so hard to do in the middle of a year?
Well, I mean, it just depends on how you're running your defense, how many young guys you have out there, if you have to change everything. Some guys, you know, it's not going to do well. I guess what I would answer is that I think a couple of things. With running regular personnel, you're not going to run a lot of man because it makes you, I'd say, a little bit more predictable. I think they played a lot of zone while they were in that because, you know, otherwise a team would just throw four wides out there and say, okay, Michael Kendricks, you have to cover one of the wide receivers. So, I mean, that, and so it does make you, I'd say, a little bit more predictable because you're going to be playing zone most of the time. So the other thing that kind of came clear, I thought the biggest difference between last year and this year, one player, believe it or not, Justin Coleman. Justin Coleman.
He was really good here.
He was so good. And the reason why you could play sometimes with regular personnel with him out there at nickels because he was so physical. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't look like it, but he was really good at playing the run. He would set the edge a lot of times. He would take on blockers, you know, whether it was a tight end. You know, obviously he's going to lose against a guard. And that's where the other matchup goes wrong. If you have nickel out on the field and they're in some heavy set, you know, you've got a guy out there that weighs 205 instead of a guy that weighs 245 that's used to taking on blocks. So, you know, I just would say overall, the thing that I think was missing this year, and I just thought about this last night, that I thought if there's one thing that they need to be next year is more physical. They got to be more physical. They've got to take on blocks. They've got to take on and just smash guards. They've got to, you know, when you take on whether it's a tight end or a wide receiver. I mean, there's a lot of times a wide receiver comes and blocks a linebacker. He should just be dispatched immediately. Yeah, I mean, just grab him and throw him down, or you know, just plow him back into the backfield. So, and you know, get like penetration out on that edge. You know, and I know Brock Heward was talking a little bit about that out on the edge. You know, I don't know that that was so much about speed. I know Brock thinks so, but I thought it was more about physicality. That, you know, when you take that guy on, don't just catch him. You've got to go up and smash him. And, you know, a lot of times it takes you out of the play, but it also plants the guy 2-3 yards into the backfield, and that's disruptive. That's kind of what Clowney does. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess that would be my wish, is that next year this, especially, you know, against the run, those plays out on the edge, like what the Rams run, just – you know, your job has to be to just smash those guys.
So you wouldn't have a big philosophical change. You wouldn't say, okay, we're no longer a base defense. We're running. You wouldn't go for a drastic change. You would. It'd be more attitude. It'd be
To me, I think that's what was missing. And I know that's very simple, and people want to talk about scheme and things like that. That's fine. I mean, look, playing defense is always about matching up. That you don't want to get caught in a mismatch. That's what happens. Whether, like I said, whether it's too many, you know, if you have dime or nickel on the field, this is an extreme, you know, and they have, you know, a big heavy goal line. So this is the reason why the Seahawks passed on the goal line in Super Bowl 49. Because they knew, first of all, that they had to throw it at least once to get all four plays in, but also that was a big, heavy run defense formation that the Patriots had personnel-wise. And they had three wide receivers in there. So there's a mismatch there that tells you, throw the ball. And, yeah, I know people are going to argue that, but remember Luke Wilson told us, absolutely, that means throw the ball. And he was around the offense the entire year. So, you know, that's where you have to, you got to be smart about it. You can't just say, I'm going to go out and play base defense no matter what. You have to be able to match up. And I thought they felt like they could match up with Michael Kendricks and his athleticism. And you see how his brother plays, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
He is the best linebacker against the pass I've seen in a long time. He got a pick in that San Francisco game. And then, you know, he had a couple of other drops that were really good. And I know, for linebackers, he led the league in passes broken up. So, you know, you have to have a guy out there, if he's a linebacker, that's able to play both. And they did in Kendricks, and I thought that was probably the main reason why they went with that. The other part of it might have been they didn't have a guy like Justin Coleman. You know, and at the time, I was like, man, you can't pay that guy $9 million a year.
Yeah, it seemed exorbitant. And at the time, I didn't want to see him go, but I'm with you. I was like, I can't justify that kind of money for a nickel corner.
It was a $36 million contract, I think,
and
he got.
And now you're going.
Yeah, you wish you had a do-over on that one.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, because they're not in bad position salary cap-wise. They probably could have made it happen if they wanted to. And they probably felt the same way. Like, man, we can't justify paying a nickel corner that much money. But then you see how valuable he was, especially when you had the rotation of Jamar Taylor and Akeem King, and it just you couldn't find it, and it was debilitating in some instances, right? Where it really seemed to impact this team in a negative way. What was happening at that spot?
Yeah, well, I just always wondered whether it was just that the linebackers were that good, or if the nickel guy was that bad, and why you stuck with the base defense. And I don't. Everybody knows I don't know the X's and O's, but I can read stats like anybody else, and I can read Bob Condotta too, and he had something in the Seattle Times earlier this year, or just a couple weeks ago at the end of the regular season. This Seattle defense gave up the second most yardage in franchise history. So you look at that and you go, well, that's really unusual, because Pete Carroll's known for a defense, and we saw it, and Dave talks about it. The takeaways compensated for a lot of the yardage they were giving up. But, boy, I'm so sick of just this philosophy of, like, yeah, let's keep everything in front of you. Okay, well, that's great. But, boy, you're moving the chains quite a bit against this team, and you're relying on the – and I've always hated bend but don't break, too.
Yeah,
and
I know it's frustrating.
I know it's a good philosophy, and it's kind of weird to be arguing against it when you're 11-5 with all the injuries you had and the defense not being that good, even when they were healthy, and then you lose Kendricks. And I shake my head, because I'm looking right now at the yards per play. They give up 6 yards per play this year, and they're in the company of – the Texans actually gave up 6.1, and so I thought it was going to catch up to the Texans in the playoffs, and it finally did. When they were ahead 24-0, I thought, well, maybe it won't catch up to them this week, but sure caught up to them in the last 3 quarters against Kansas City. But you look at the rest of these teams, I mean, they're all non-playoff teams. If you're giving up 5.9, 6 yards per play, you're not going to be going very far, and I don't know what the answers are. But they got to do something different next year, whether it's scheme-wise, personnel-wise, blitz more often. And the problem with that is that we know that Pete Carroll's really not going to change his philosophy on defense, because he likes to rush with 4 guys. So I keep coming back to Ken Norton. I don't know how much he's at fault for this or whether it's a personnel problem, but I think Ken Norton's got to shoulder some of the blame too.
Here's a cut from Brock Huard on with Danny and Gallant this morning, and they were asking him what the Seahawks need in turn. Where do they need to address just in terms of adding talent to the defense? And here's what he had to say.
I think most importantly, they've got to get more dudes on the bus. What I mean by that is you've got to just simply get much more talent. Danny, to your question there, I would probably say talent. Right? If that was one of your three answers, it was injuries, it was talent, it was scheme. While injuries was the obvious answer, I think talent for me is you know, the way I would go with it. You need more talent defensively. You need more difference makers.
Specifically where?
Specifically at all three levels of their defense, specifically.
Wow.
You need more speed. We talked about this yesterday and the need for speed. You need more of it. Right? You need, you know, how many does San Francisco have up front? Four, five, six dudes that can all go and run. Two, three linebackers that can all go and run. You know, in the secondary, and they're beat up in their secondary, and they're not the end-all, be-all in their secondary because they can get picked on.
So he's saying all three areas, and they asked him, is it, you know, defensively, what was the biggest problem? Was it injuries, lack of talent, or the scheme? And he puts the lack of talent as number one.
Yeah, it's – would you say that last year? I mean, I guess – you look at corners. I guess when he said that, I thought maybe he was going to say corners. He said all three levels. But, I mean, I think they have the talent at linebacker. I just don't know. Yeah. I just feel like maybe the philosophy needs to be different. Like, we are going to be smash-mouth guys.
If they had Coleman, let's say they re-signed him, do you think they're still running the same amount of base defense, that they're having all three linebackers out there as often as they
did? You have Coleman and Kendricks?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. It's just one of those you don't know unless you go through a season and, you know, they face different things at different times. I think Coleman was really good on the edge. He was really good on the edge, and he was a guy you could rely on to come up and take on blockers and turn plays back in. So, I mean, I guess it's either, you know, Kendricks, they didn't have Coleman this year. They had him last year and it worked. And now this year you didn't have him and you had Kendricks instead. And so I don't know if you compare those two players and if that's all of why they decided to go, you know, more base defense than going with nickel. But I guess there weren't times where I go, man, they should have had an extra DB out there this year.
It's the lack of faith in the DBs they had, though.
Yeah, it wasn't that. So, yeah, early on I thought, yeah, you're right, because it could be that because they played a lot of zone and it was soft zone. They were allowing everybody to catch balls in front of them. And then, you know, a lot of it was the second level wasn't getting back and getting in front of receivers and things like that. So it was just an off year. I don't think the defense itself is a problem that you need to have some big scheme change. But, you know, to Brock's point, I guess, who was the leading sack guy this year?
Was it Rasheem?
Rasheem Green with four.
It was Rasheem Green. Yeah, and I mean, is he a super talented pass rusher?
I think he's a guy.
This is his second year. I think he improved drastically, and if he can take that step. So to me, it's more about, like, I don't know if they think these guys are going to develop. Is Trey Flowers going to have the year next year that Shaquille Griffin had this year?
It gives you hope because it's a mirror image. We were really excited about who he was in year one, talking about Shaq and Trey. Shaq had a down second year by everybody, including his own estimation, and bounced back really well this year. Trey had a down second year by everybody's estimation, and we'll see if he bounces. I mean, it's a mirror image of each other just in terms of who they were the first year, how they were viewed, and then what they brought to the table the next year and how disappointing it feels. So that's why I'm not ready to pull the plug on Trey Flowers. I'm as disappointed as anybody, but he's shown he can be good, and maybe the third year will be representative of what he truly can do the way Shaq showed this year.
Yeah. Well, you know, remember last year in the draft, they didn't get a cornerback. Right, they got a safety, and you know there were no corners that were taken. So maybe they do need to sort of up the ante and ensure that Trey has a really good year, like Shaquille did. But Trey had three interceptions.
Yeah, Trey, well, they need a nickel corner too, though.
Yeah, and Trey had a lot of good hits, and you know you saw the reason why. I just did on Football 101. I don't know when that's going up on 710sports.com.
Where?
710sports.com.
Okay.
Maybe today, maybe tomorrow. But you know we talked about the fact that they're just. There was no communication out there between Trey and Ugo Amadi on that first touchdown catch. And also, Green Bay just ran a great scheme where they ran the two receivers at each other. They stopped and then went different ways, basically. And there was confusion there. At first, they both jumped on the inside guy. Then they both ran towards the outside guy, which was Devontae Adams. It was too late. You know, so, and then, you know, if you want to talk about scheme, the free safety was way over in the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. And there was three receivers to that side, and Davante Adams was one of them. On the other side was Jimmy Graham. And so, you know, McDougal had him, by the way, they had him try to block Bobby Wagner. And Bobby could have got home because he was running a blitz off the side, but of course he didn't block him. And but Aaron Rodgers just got rid of the ball too fast. And it happened so fast over on that other side, I thought, man, you could have used a safety over the top there to help. Not a single high safety, but just a safety.
Could he have been a single low one and it would have worked out?
Single. That's the
it's
next.
Better to have him high, Jim.
I can't wait till that becomes the next popular phrase. Single low safety.
Yeah.
Single low safety. We'll get deeper into this. We got a lot we want to hear from Pete Carroll and addressing the defense and specific players. But for now, let's take two.
Take two.
Washington State has hired a new head coach. Hawaii's Nick Rolovich has been named head coach of Washington State University.
Yeah, I tweeted out that news. And I just said, what do you think, Coug fans? Just trying to get, because I don't really have a hardcore opinion on the guy. His record looks nice, but he's not a household name. And the responses, and you can see it at Bob Stelton on Twitter, were kind of lukewarm. There'd be a couple of people like, oh, I like it. I think he fits in with the personnel that they currently have that was recruited by Leach and everything. And then others saying, that's going to be more of the same. They're not going to have a defense. You need a defensive mind. They're not going to run the ball. It's kind of there wasn't an overwhelming love it.
Well, I love it. I love it. I'm excited about it. I can't wait until Nick Rolovich gets in there and we see the run and shoot. And I think we're going to have the same type players there at Washington State that'll work in his system that worked in the air raid. And so if you brought in a guy with a different offensive system, might have been a problem. And I think the concerns that Coug fans have about the defense are warranted because Hawaii is no great shakes in the defensive department. We saw Hawaii up close here at Husky Stadium. The Huskies scored 52 points against him this year. So the defensive coordinator position, that's going to be a key job for Nick Rolovich to have success over there in Pullman.
LSU won the national championship 42-25 over Clemson last night.
I was sitting there watching that game thinking, number one, this was like watching a pro football game. The speed and the hitting and everything. But the other thing I thought is, I wonder how many of those guys are being scouted, you know, by the Seahawks and everybody else in the NFL. There's so much talent on the field.
Boy, Joe Burrow looked good, didn't he?
Joe Burrow's great.
Wow.
Well, and how about the other quarterback? I mean,
Trevor Lawrence.
Lawrence
didn't play as well as we've seen him play, but he's tough as nails.
He's 6'6". He's tough as can be, and he can run.
He'll be fast back next year.
And then Moyer sent me a video of the left tackle of Clemson blocking and then running down like 30 yards downfield. I mean, there's some ridiculous athletes. And I heard somebody say, I think that like Ohio State has like 15 players that are being looked at. 15.
It seems about right, right? It's Ohio State. It's Alabama. Yeah. It's, you know, it's always the same schools where you've got, it feels like 10 to 15 guys that are all NFL prospects.
But I think you're going to see 15 or 20 of those kids that were on the field last night at least get a shot in the NFL.
Well, Burrow's going to be number one overall, right?
Going to Cincinnati. I really enjoyed the game last night, and I loved,
I wish it were closer. I just wanted a really
good game. Well, yeah, it was close into the third quarter anyway, and late third quarter. And then I was hoping LSU was going to win because I wanted to see Ed Orgeron afterwards.
Want to hear him speak?
Yeah, I just wanted to hear him talk. That's all, and he didn't disappoint in that area. I got a kick. I heard Salk today on Tom, Jake, and Stacy, and complaining about the length of the game. And I'm just like, what? Because it was 4 hours. I don't like college football ending. And I just kept thinking, man, this is the last college football game of the year.
Right.
And if it had gone on 5 hours, the more the merrier for me.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk more about that game as well. But meanwhile, it's a season Seahawks finale version of Question Man. It'll continue through baseball season, all that. But I've got questions about the Seahawks specifically. Coming up next, it is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Whether you've got an answer or not, Bob has a question. And another question. And another question.
Bob has lots of questions. Bob demands answers.
You're going to have to do better than that.
Bob Stelton is the Question Man.
You're Question Man.
That's exactly right. I am Question Man.
So, Bob, what questions do you have for us today?
I don't know, Bobby.
That's right. I got questions for you, by God. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore. Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton with us at 4 o'clock, and then a long edition of El Hombre at 5 o'clock, which will be the case until next football season.
By popular demand.
By popular demand. Lots of people complaining about the short segments, so hopefully everybody will enjoy the fact that he'll be on for a full length, 5 to 5:23-ish, around there.
So good. Text in if you don't think he's the greatest thing in the world.
Oh, you're just asking for those people to come in.
Yeah, what if
that guy stinks? Why do you have him on?
Yeah, there might be people clamoring for shorter segments.
Yeah. Hey, let me. I had some questions planned, but I want to ask you the question I asked you during the break. 4th and 11 seems to be a debate for some reason. I don't quite get it. Seahawks had 3 timeouts and the 2-minute warning, so you essentially had 4 timeouts to work with. You're on your own side of the field around the 35, somewhere around there. I can't remember the exact yardage.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there's a debate at 4th and 11 that you should have gone for it. Should they have gone for it, Dave?
No. The end.
Jim?
I'm done.
Should they have gone for it?
Well, I can see why people think they should have gone for it. Number one,
3 timeouts and the 2-minute warning.
Well, number one, you're relying on a defense that isn't very good. And
right,
you've got Aaron Rodgers on the other side and Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones. And yet, in the second half, they did a good job. Packers only scored 7 points. Now, if you did go for it and didn't make it, I think the line of scrimmage was your own 36 or 38.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and let's say you hold them. So, I mean, this is the case for going for it. Let's say you hold them and use your timeouts then, and they kick a field goal. Mason Crosby comes out and makes it an 8-point game. So it's still a 1-score game. So you could at least, I know Dave said the end, but you could at least debate it.
Yeah. Well, sure, if you want to. I mean, you're going to cause a lot of stir, and you're going to get 3 knuckleheads to talk about it for a segment, you know. But to me, it's not even close.
I'm with you. I didn't even consider it, because if they had no timeouts and, hey, you got the 2-minute warning and that's it,
yeah,
different conversation. You had all
of
your
timeouts. Well, Carol at least said if they hadn't had a sack, if it was 4th and 5 or 4th and 6, then they would have gone for it.
Maybe thought about it. But, you know, there was just so much time left. The other thing is, presumably, now I'm trying to look up how many, I'm trying to remember. I know they passed on the last one. I think they passed on a couple of those downs. But you would think that, hey, they're going to try to eat the clock up. So what does that do? That means run. And that means, that makes it fairly predictable on defense, right? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, they did throw on 2nd down, as it turned out, when Clowney was chasing after Rodgers, and they got a break there when the ball went out of bounds.
Right. So, you know, that's at that. I'm going back to that time, though. You know, first of all, you got 3 timeouts. You're in a bad field position. If you don't pick up the 4th and 11, and look, that's going to be, what play do you call? What play do you call on 4th and 11? I mean, you know, they're going to be dropping to the sticks. It's going to be incredibly difficult. So, you know, and then you have the 3 timeouts and you have a 2-minute warning. And I know that you can go back and say, well, it didn't work, so they might as well have tried it. Well, at the time, let's transport ourselves back to that time. And then even if you're like a Pete Carroll, or you're just a coach who goes, you know, you're looking like, how is this going to look? I think that is in the back of coaches' minds of how bad is this going to look?
Yeah, when you're on your own 35, 36,
when I do this,
whatever it is,
and go for it and fail, I'm going to look like a really bad coach. Now, I'm not saying that that's front and foremost on Pete's mind. He doesn't really care. I think he does what he wants to do, but I think there's a little bit of that. And, you know, I just don't see how you possibly justify that. But like I said, you know they're trying to burn the clock, so you know it's probably going to be, I mean, you're trying to figure out, like, with these RPOs and stuff, is it a run or a pass?
Mm-hmm.
You narrow it down that it's probably going to be pretty heavy run, because they're going to want to burn the clock.
Right.
So there's that advantage you get to playing defense and kicking it away. And then, as it turned out, they had 2 different opportunities to pick it up. So, yeah, I don't see. I mean, I know that the article you're looking at, that's a good job. Is it Joe?
Joe Fan.
It's a good job by him, because he's creating lots of, you know, controversy and everything. But I don't know how many people that are saying that really believe that, because, yeah, it was just, yeah. And then they had the 2 opportunities. They end up. How much would you say that was a first down by, like, and maybe if it's a
smidge.
I'm still not sure if it was.
But there wasn't enough evidence to overturn the call in the field.
Right. So maybe it was 3 or 4 inches, 5 inches, and maybe they get up there and go for it on 4th down, you know. But still, I do believe that the way that you're able to predict kind of what they're doing, it's gonna make a difference, and that I think everybody pretty much thought that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, question number 2. And you started to touch on this yesterday. I told you to hang on, because I wanted to ask you about this. Why don't they have Shaq in a situation, especially in a game like this, where Trey Flowers is having a real tough time with Davante Adams? And I'm not saying Shaq would have shut him down, but you saw that he was on him a couple times, and they went to Adams, and he didn't come up with anything. So why not have your best corner follow their biggest threat?
Yeah, I guess to me, it's a good question because somebody else texted it in yesterday. And yeah, I mean, maybe.
I came up with it first.
I'm sure you did, Bob. You also have sources?
Yeah, I've got my sources that told me to ask that question.
Yeah, so, they just haven't done that really in the past. This defense, remember when, and this is going way back, but it's still Pete's defense, but remember in 2013 when Jimmy Graham and Darren Sproles came in here, and everybody's like, what are they going to do? Oh, my God, they got to, you know, I remember having that debate before that week on the huddle, and they just ended up bumping Bobby out and KJ out, and they covered him, and they didn't do anything extravagant or out of the ordinary. The other thing is it kind of makes you look – it makes you look predictable because, I mean, if all of a sudden Shaquille's on the other side of the field with Davante Adams, you pretty much know it's man-to-man, right? Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to play zone, you know. So that's another part of it. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a fair question to ask, and I thought – it's just – the other thing is with Trey, he had, like I said, three picks. Who was he – who was he covering when he got the pick against Minnesota that bounced off? Was that Diggs?
Might have been Diggs because I think Thielen was out, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think it was Diggs, and he had him totally covered up. And then the other thing, I think the only problems you really had with Trey this year was that he got those penalties because he didn't trust himself. And I remember him talking about, hey, man, I think we can. But also, I put a lot of that first touchdown probably on Ugo Amadi, you know, because he's the younger guy, and it's not like I'm pointing the finger at him, but there was probably a miscommunication there where if maybe Trey had somebody else that had more experience and they'd worked together, maybe that whole thing works out. But he's been covering guys this year. So I don't think that you all of a sudden blow the game plan out and go, okay, we're going to do something totally different that we don't do all the time.
Right.
I was up in the booth screaming, like, let's cover Davante Adams, though.
Well, yeah, what about in hindsight, Dave, when you look at that game and what Adams did, should they have doubled him more and and try to get the other guys to beat you instead of him?
Yes, in hindsight, because he caught lots of passes.
160 yards worth.
I was just trying to add something to the segment. I call myself a segment enhancer at times.
One more quick question.
You are an enhancer.
We're up against the break, and we asked this to I asked Dwayne Brown this yesterday when we had him on, and I don't know if there's a clear answer. Why are they so terrible at their starts? I don't understand this. They're so consistent with starting slow. We all marvel when they score on a first drive or when they take a lead in a first half. We're all like, whoa. What is this? Because it just doesn't happen very often. How do they remedy that? We can all talk about it. You can't win in the first and the second and third. You know what? You could dig a big, giant hole, though.
I'll bet you they talk about it in the offseason.
Is it tempo? Should they go up
maybe
tempo early? Should they be more aggressive with their play calling?
Yeah, I mean, they might actually mix that up. That might be something because every year, you know, you go through it. But when you ask Dwayne Brown and he goes, man, I just can't put my finger on it. I mean, that guy knows what everybody's doing on every play. He's a veteran. He's smart. He knows how to play. And if he can't figure it out, you know, so maybe Pete addresses that and says, hey, maybe we go up tempo. Maybe we do this. When's the last time you remember them blowing somebody out?
Well, they
in the beginning.
They've had one comfortable win.
Arizona in 2012. Arizona, 58-0. Remember, they jumped on them. What about the Bills that same year? I remember that. But I don't remember any time where they just jumped on top of a team and just blew them
Carolina,
out.
Carolina, they got to a quick start and got that lead, and then they started kicking it away late in the game, and it became a close game. But
yeah, maybe yeah, Philly just, a little bit.
Yeah, it's just not what they do for whatever reason, and it's really, yeah.
Atlanta, they were way ahead, too.
Yeah, and then they let them back into the game. So it's not part of what they do for whatever reason, and I know Pete's mantra is you can't win in the first, second, third quarter, but again, you can certainly dig yourself a big, giant hole and make it really hard to win those games. So I'd like to see him change that, and it's probably tough to answer. Well, here's why they're such slow starters. But meanwhile, Dave took issue with some officiating decisions in last night's championship game. In fact, I posted a couple of videos on our Twitter page, at Bob, Dave, and more on Twitter. Check it out. You can check out the videos there, and we'll talk about that. Coming up next here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the show, as he does most days at 4 o'clock. Then El Hombre, 5 o'clock edition of El Hombre, which will be the case until next football season. We'll just have to work around the preemptions. Baseball season, there's a lot of preempted shows, so we'll have to figure out what we're doing there.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be good to have long segments with El Hombre up until next football season. So, meanwhile, national championship game, it ultimately ended up being a blowout, pretty one-sided. Joe Burrow's a stud. Kid's good. What do you have, 5 touchdown passes last night, 463 yards passing.
Yeah, I wonder what
he's
kind of,
quick.
I wonder what kind of a night he was going to have. He started out 4 for 9, so a slow start, but boy, he finished strong, didn't he?
14 carries, 58 yards, and a touchdown. He's tough as well, man.
He can run too.
Yeah, he's a good-looking player out there, man. So 42-25, but one of the players of consequence on the side of the Clemson defense, Skalski.
That's a linebacker name right there.
Yeah, he's got a linebacker look. He's got the neck brace. He's built like a fire hydrant.
He looks like one of those guys I saw pictures of in the walls up at in Green Bay and Lambeau Field.
Like he should have been playing in the 50s.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, according to the broadcast, he's the heart and soul of that defense. He gets called for a targeting hit where he used the crown of his helmet, and he was kicked out of the game, wasn't even allowed to stand on the field, walked back to the locker room.
National championship game.
Yeah.
And it wasn't helmet to helmet.
No, but as they explained on the broadcast, apparently it doesn't matter. It's anywhere from head to toe. If you use the crown of the helmet, that's the rule. And then you isolated 2 plays, and I put them up there on our Twitter page, at Bob, Dave, and Moore, and asked what's the difference between the two. Because Lawrence got hit right in the head.
By Chasen.
Yeah.
Yeah, number 18.
With the crown of his helmet, yet no flag, no ejection.
Well, and the thing is, I guess my point is I don't want either of them ejected. They're both football plays. They're both good tackles. But, you know, just, I don't know, nobody, I guess it's hard to convince people this, that how fast things happen on the field, and that if you're trying to lower your shoulder, which you do when you make a tackle.
Your head comes down. Yeah, it's weird.
Unless it's up your tailpipe.
Okay? Sometimes it'd be weird to lower your shoulder and have your
yeah
head up in the air. You're going to break your neck.
You're going to end up getting hurt. And, you know, I coached youth football and high school football, and I always tell the guys, you know, see what you hit, definitely. But, I mean, a lot of times in these plays out in the middle of the field, you know, you're making a play, everything's happening really quick, and you just go to tackle him, and, you know, your head hits the wrong spot. And I just thought, you know, and the other thing is, and there was lots of outrage on my side, actually. Usually you'll get about 50-50 where people, well, they're trying to protect the players and this and that. But all of a sudden it gets down to the national championship game, and people are going, well, you just kicked this guy out of the national championship game. And, you know, it's not like that's going to solve any kind of a problem. You know, it's, and that's what to me is the biggest point of that is, And I'll admit that Skalski, his head went down a little bit more than the other guys, mm-hmm. but it's not correctable behavior. And if you played football at like a, you know, higher level, even in high school, you know, it happens really fast. You're not trying to do that. You're trying to make a tackle. And the fact that they kick him out and then they have these policemen come over and escort him off the field. And you said this, Bob, I think in the pit before. Yeah, I mean, can he take his helmet off? Or, Jim, you said it maybe, and, you know, at least be with his teammates and at least be there with him. He gets kicked off the field.
And they got the camera all the way into the locker room, basically.
Yeah, it just, to me, but I don't see a big difference. And I've got a video file going on my phone. At some point I'll, you know, maybe send it to one of you guys and bother you and have you put it on Twitter. But there's just so many times where you see guys lower their head and there's no penalty. And I'm like, why isn't there one there then? And why isn't? And my point is that you could call it on almost every single play, you know, down in the trenches when those guys, you know, when it's out in the middle, and especially if somebody gets hurt, then the flags come out and it becomes, you know, if it looks bad, then all of a sudden, you know, they're looking at it and they're throwing flags. So to me, I don't think, because the other thing that happens with this Chasen kid, he hits Trevor Lawrence right in the helmet. Mm-hmm. You know, with his helmet. But, again, I don't think he's trying to do that. He's trying to make a tackle. So, you know.
No, but weren't you surprised they didn't review that at least? I was. I thought there was no penalty in the live play, but I thought maybe they would stop and check that out.
Right. So where's the consistency on that? And were those Pac-12 officials?
I believe they were.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I've seen them. They threw this poor kid from Colorado out a couple of times, Landman. The really good linebacker for the same type of thing. One was against the Cougs.
Mm-hmm.
I think, did he maybe hit Minshew? It was last year. Or, you know, last season. But anyway, to me, it's not correctable behavior. They need to figure that out. And there needs to be a point where you go, okay, we're trying to make an inherently unsafe game safe. And how ludicrous is that? And then, you know, where does it take away from the game itself? If you're starting to throw everybody out for these, at what point does it not become a good product? You know, and again, I'll go back to the whole safety thing. And this is more NFL than anything, but maybe in college you could say these guys are paid a scholarship anyway. Have them sign a waiver. I would have signed up for it. I'm not going to come back and ask for any kind of, you know, pay or reparations or anything because I got a concussion or anything like that. I signed up for that. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're trying to protect the players. And I know in the NFL it's kind of a CYA thing where they don't want these guys coming back and, you know, suing them and things like that. I mean, if you sign something that says, I know that I'm putting myself in danger of possibly, you know, having effects from concussions because I'm hitting with my head, but I'm going to sign up for it anyway because I'm going to make a ton of money mm-hmm. and it's what I love to do. I'll sign on for that, but maybe that's the answer on the extreme, but something has to be done because it's just so inconsistent. And again, I don't think it's solving any problem. It's not a correctable behavior.
All right, coming up, the professor is back. We'll get his thoughts on the end of a very promising season for the Seahawks. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.